This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Well, not quite. I'll be talking about more than just the Benjamins. Welcome to FinTech Beat, where finance, technology, and policy come together. I'm your host, Chris Brummer, and the future of finance is now. The feedback from our episode on Black and Brown perspectives on crypto was one of the strongest ever. And we heard from people from diverse backgrounds, from Paris to Washington, D.C., on how the episode struck a nerve and helped push the conversation in ways few had heard before, which, of course, is just what we wanted to hear back at FinTech Beat. And one of the participants, Dante Disparte, the chief strategy officer at Circle, the payments platform supporting the stablecoin USDC, hasn't rested on his laurels. And he's back with us to not just talk theory, but practice. You see, Circle just did something that's pretty rare in the ecosystem. It's backing up its rhetoric about supporting inclusion to announce a string of initiatives squarely designed to support underrepresented communities, from Black banks and HBCUs to women and minority entrepreneurs. Now, we've always taken a keen interest in doing well by doing good, and the announcement just fascinated me. So I asked Dante to return to the show in an encore and to walk us through just what Circle is doing and how it fits into the larger conversation on crypto and inclusion.
Can I get an encore? Do you want more? Cook and roll with the Brooklyn boys. So for one last time, I need y'all to brawl.
Dante, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be back and to pull a repeat offense with you on air.
I've got to say, you know, you have truly not been resting on your laurels here. And Circle, as a company, has made some really interesting announcements, especially in this domain of financial inclusion. That's caught the eye of lots of news media, from the Financial Times to obviously the New York Times and beyond. But maybe you can just sort of walk the audience through that maybe hasn't seen this or is not quite as caught up on the company, just what you're doing when it comes to financial inclusion.
Yeah. Well. First of all, as a leader, you know, my disposition, and the good news is I share this with the other senior leaders at Circle, is you should never wait to be asked to do the right thing. And I think we set a pretty high bar in the particular episode that you referenced, you know, on the Black and Brown sort of movement and voice in the blockchain and fintech ecosystem. And in that great conversation we had, I mentioned, you know, watch this space, that we were working on certain projects. And so the manifestation of that, the end of the beginning, to quote Winston Churchill, is this initiative we announced last week called Circle Impact. And so there are four pillars to that initiative, and each of them is driving at improving financial inclusion and improving outcomes. We have a shot with fintech and the future of payments and banking to be more inclusive than the past, but we're not going to do it unless we're big. So there are four pillars as a part of this initiative. The first is to allocate a share of USDC reserves, which today are cash and short-term treasuries, the safest assets you can get to back a stablecoin. We want to allocate a share of USDC reserves accruing to billions of dollars over time to minority depository institutions and community banks. This is an initiative that we've just announced. Of course, the diligence process for allocating these reserves has to improve the risk management standards for the overall ecosystem. But we think if we strengthen the balance sheets of these very institutions, we will strengthen those institutions and their communities. So that's pillar one. And we think that there's a lot of opportunities there. We look very much forward to working with public-private partnerships, working with the OCC and Project Reach and other initiatives.
You know, that's just worth highlighting, since the two topics aren't usually in the same conversation, much less the same sentence. You're talking about moving resources, obviously, to MDIs, these minority depository institutions and community banks, which, just for our audience, you know, tend to serve really critical roles in their communities because they provide funding for people seeking to purchase often their first homes or to provide startup capital for small businesses or offer even emergency support for lots of people locally facing unexpected liquidity crunches. So you're really targeting, let's call it a high impact area with this particular move. So what's the second leg of your program?
Pillar two is for the future of financial services and payments to be more inclusive than the past. We cannot allow for a divide on literacy, technical literacy, and financial literacy to widen a gap where technology can otherwise solve it. So we're embarking on what I call digital financial literacy initiatives. We want to do that in partnership with HBCUs as one organization, one custodian or stakeholder to this effort, but also put Circle subject matter experts on the stage, as it were, to start really driving forward basic understanding of what is a good digital wallet, what's a stable coin, just make sure that all of these terms of art that we use pretty liberally are broadly understood, but also made tangible. Putting digital wallets in the hands of people and in the hands of communities that can be great beneficiaries and contributors and developers of this open internet of value. We want to make sure that we solve for that over a long range. The third pillar is Circle operates a company called Seed Invest. It's one of the leading equity crowdfunding companies in the United States. We have powered hundreds of millions of dollars mobilized to entrepreneurs, lowering both the barriers of entry for investors and the barriers of opportunity for entrepreneurs. But we think we could be much more deliberate in terms of developing campaigns using the Seed Invest platform and equity crowdfunding on the internet to improve outcomes for women entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs of color, and other underrepresented groups across the country. We want them to raise their hands. We want to see them. We want to use that platform as a powerful driver of equity, literally and figuratively, in terms of entrepreneurship across the country. And then finally, an area very close to home is leveraging faster payments using stablecoins and blockchain-based networks for humanitarian and relief and disaster response domestically and around the world. So this too is an area of great opportunity. All four pillars are part of Circle Impact. We aim to measure them over time. We want them to move billions of dollars. And then with it, you know, raise all ships, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, you've chosen four very distinct areas. I mean, from MDIs all the way to crowdfunding. How did you end up on those four topics? I mean, what were the drivers in terms of determining that those were the four areas that you wanted to sort of weigh in on?
That's a great question, Chris. And so when you look at Circle's mission statement, which is to raise global economic prosperity through the frictionless exchange of financial value, on the one hand, a very aspirational statement, but on the other hand, it makes for absolute clarity of purpose when it comes to driving financial inclusion, financial innovation, and protecting financial integrity. Three pillars that have personally always mattered to me. But then the best way to move that needle is to say, how do we do it in a manner that also advances American economic competitiveness and also acknowledges that as a company with employees across 35 states and 11 countries and expanding that perimeter of our business, supporting an always-on global economy creates an opportunity for us to do something really, really meaningful here in the United States as well. And I think the idea of distributing a share of USDC reserves, as we've outlined in this initiative, hopefully one day it includes a bank and a financial institution in every state and every U.S. territory. That, to me, harkens deeply to the concepts of distribution and decentralization in the blockchain ecosystem. It's a patently good risk management decision, so there's no single point of failure. And then, frankly, as I said before, it's a pathway of really demonstrating that these open technologies and the ability to spur digital transformation of our banking system, including often underrepresented banks, is broadly good for those communities, broadly good for those banks. And it's not just about being a beneficiary on the receiving end. It's ultimately also about being a contributor and learning this journey. One of the ironies of banking is that if every bank in America has to be as well endowed and as cyber secure as JP Morgan, then a lot of banks in America are in trouble because the failure of any one bank erodes confidence in banking. And so we think we have an opportunity through this program to, you know, again, spur innovation, spur adoption, strengthen communities. Pillar one. And it's just meaningful. Considering the reserves for USDC are incredibly conservative, we think it's just a meaningful program to initiate.
Yeah, you know, and I suppose the very fact that you're doing this, and this, I guess, ties over to the second issue, the digital financial literacy issue, right? It's a learning experience. I mean, really, regardless as to the size of a financial institution, you know, virtually every financial institution, big and small, they're trying to learn as much as they can about new financial technologies, and crypto is certainly no exception. And that's probably why you've seen so much activity even recently with some of the banking regulators. You know, when you move to that second issue of financial literacy, you know, do you see connections between it and that first pillar?
No question. I mean, my hope, genuinely speaking, is that I think we're actually at a massive inflection point in this kind of emerging Internet of Value. We have a choice as a society to enshrine our principles, our values in the design of this Internet of Value as it is emerging, or we have a choice to cede that future to potentially hostile nations and potentially opaque and complex actors on the internet. And so, you know, the choice is pretty stark in my mind, and I completely see the two go hand in hand, that where you put money and the proverbial skin in the game also signals where you ought to invest in bridging kind of the intellectual capital sort of gap that we also have to face in this country. That you know, over the last decade, digital assets and crypto assets have been the best performing emerging asset class. And then armed with nothing more than a digital wallet and an internet-connected mobile phone, this could be a powerful wealth creation opportunity. But not if you're subjected to internet funny money, not if you're subjected to not really understanding what you're investing in. And so we think we have an opportunity as a company, and frankly, an obligation as a company to help drive digital financial literacy. This is on both ends of the spectrum. As consumers, businesses, retails, but also across the regulatory spectrum, the policy spectrum, and others.
I find that really interesting for a number of reasons. I mean, personally, I found, you know, like you, I spend a lot of my time either talking to regulators or policymakers or whoever really wants to know about stuff, I suppose, here in Washington, D.C., but also a lot of time, you know, I'm getting a lot of calls, you know, from high schools, from black fraternities and others, you know, just reaching out with cold calls and kind of asking, you know, for, you know, a kind of beginning start or crash course, if one will, in some of the issues that you and I are talking about. And there's this sense that, you know, you can't let the internet pass you by twice, you know, and that ultimately everybody needs to participate in these larger conversations relating to digital transformation. And those kinds of conversations aren't just taking place on the ground and on Twitter, but these are the kinds of conversations that you're also hearing even in black and brown and Asian MDIs and CDFIs who are undergoing some form of digital transformation writ large. And I think it's really interesting taking this particular approach to these financial institutions at the very same time at which they're thinking very deeply about digital transformation more generally, and that's a conversation that I've been really pleased to take part in, and it's interesting seeing how your approach could or would fit in with the other kinds of conversations taking place with, you know, migrating transactions to the cloud, to AI, machine learning, to alternative data and credit scoring. You know, like, you know, what then happens when you then add this newest component, and what does that mean for the overall digital financial literacy in the community? Is your focus here, you know, just to make clear, is it digital financial literacy, or are you thinking about financial literacy writ large?
Well, I think, you know, it's sort of, you know, it's tangible as much as we could make it tangible. And therefore, like, just like the capital allocation and just like the equity crowdfunding platform that I'd mentioned before, this is an all ships rising approach that we're trying to take, in which, you know, if you don't, to paraphrase, you know, Jacques Cousteau, right? you could read all the books about marine biology, but unless you jump in the water, you know nothing about the ocean. And I think you could read all the books and attend all the lectures. And one of the very powerful attributes of the blockchain ecosystem and the fintech wave we're talking about is that it is open source, and that, you know, to the extent you could put this in your hands, to the extent you could use a stable coin like USDC for your first payment, and you could see the art of the possible, then you start to really unlock ideas. I don't want people merely to be beneficiaries on the receiving end, or nor observers. I think it's really important that people are developers, and that banks see themselves building on these APIs, and they see themselves building on this technology stack. The infrastructure that we're building on is public. And so woe to us if we fail to ensure that more people, more banks, more communities know how to build on top of this. So this is literacy at the very basic level, as you would with any other financial sort of service, you know, don't invest more than you can afford to lose and so on. But it's also literacy at the developer level, so that you could build and you could envision a future in which, for example, HBCUs have developer guilds. We've had some very, very amazing conversations already with a number of HBCUs across the country that already are putting USDC and Circle kind of capabilities and blockchain capabilities in the hands of their students, but they're doing it peripherally. We think we could put fuel on that fire, and you could argue for developer guilds, that so that banks and communities and others know how to build on these public networks, not just be recipients of the services that are riding on them. So this is multifaceted, and you know, we hope again makes a big impact.
No, really. I mean, honestly, kudos to you and to the Circle team. I mean, even, you know, I'm not going to belabor the point, but even the crowdfunding angle, and this is, you're talking to someone who's been sort of, I guess, involved in the crowdfunding policy conversation in one way or another since the Jobs Act. But even there was this financial literacy sort of component to it. And there's really interesting data about sort of who, particularly data relating to gender, you know, as to crowdfunding and how crowdfunding stacks up as an opportunity mechanism for fundraising vis-a-vis other more traditional sources of finance. But I think that ultimately, you know, when you look at the entire sort of array of announcements, I mean, it's a pretty ambitious agenda, as yeah, you yourself said. I mean, you guys are swinging for the fences here. You know, what kind of timeline do you perceive in terms of implementing these sort of big vision goals?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. You're right. It is an ambitious agenda. In fact, I mean, anecdotally, bear in mind, Chris, I've been with Circle since April, right? So I have not yet crossed a calendar year. And it tells you a lot about the company and the leadership we have in this company. When I came to my CEO, Jeremy Lair, with the vision that we could really produce this multifaceted, multi-year initiative around Circle Impact, the only edit he made was to add the words accruing to billions in the initial press release and in the initial blog post, so that the commitment from the top of the company at all levels of the company across the ecosystem is, let's do this big. Why bother dealing with exponential technology if all you can do is mere tokenization, right? And so we actually think, you know, if the goal is an ambition level that is accruing to billions, then let's go for it. And that's sort of what's driving us for this initiative. On the crowdfunding piece of the puzzle, you know, as I'm an entrepreneur myself, and before joining the Libra project once upon a time, and then Circle, I started my own company. And as a Black man building a business in the insurance market, I know all too well what it means to basically bootstrap a business where, because of how you appear and because of your background, you're not credit worthy and you're not equity worthy. So there too, this equity crowdfunding work that we're trying to drive through the Seed Invest platform is super, super personal, super meaningful for all of us. And, you know, our colleague Ryan Feit was one of the core sort of architects of getting the Jobs Act formed. So we think even on that front, there's just an enormous amount we can do. And there's no more powerful testament to, I think, very uniquely American ideals than the power of entrepreneurialism and the power of entrepreneurship. We need it now more than ever to restart the engine of the economy, get people back to work. And the concept of free agency and entrepreneurialism with the internet as a crowdfunding source is a game changer.
Yeah. You know, when you think about these really four very important pillars, I mean, is there a sort of any priority among them, or, you know, the way in which you're listing them out, are you going to go for the MDIs first and then crowdfunding later, or is this something that you're going to tackle simultaneously?
Yeah. So it's a bit, again, it's evergreen. So we don't think there's an end point first for Circle Impact. And we hope in the first quarter of next year to make the first announcements of capital allocation through community banks and MDIs in the country. So in other words, stay tuned. We'll try to make that as public as possible without sort of violating any discretion of the banking partners we're hoping to select. But we also think, you know, it similarly touches on both public policy questions and regulatory policy questions of, you know, can these moves strengthen the balance sheets of those financial institutions? And then what does that then do to the opportunities they have, in their communities? And the sort of model of paying it forward needs more study. But we hope that as early as the first quarter of next year, we'll start to, you know, demonstrate that this is real and that, you know, the money is starting to move. Similarly, on all other areas, the humanitarian mobilization of corruption-resistant payments. I mean, if you want to create a honeypot of risk, move a pallet of cash to an emerging or developing country. Literally, it's the honeypot of corruption, bribery, and fraud. I know this intimately. I spent an entire career dealing with humanitarian supply chains and humanitarian interventions. I've only just recently rolled off of FEMA's National Advisory Council, so I can tell you when speed matters most, friction and the current analog banking system stands in the way. And that also applies to insurance. And so the ability to execute real-time, fast payments for disaster relief and humanitarian interventions is urgent. It's a source of domestic national security vulnerability, and it's a source of global vulnerability. So we want to remove all of the technological excuses for how fast payments can be executed point to point. That too will be collaborative. We want to pull in nonprofit partners, humanitarian partners, and many others. But that initiative has to start now, and we're working on it now.
Many of our listeners, I think, when just hearing this conversation, along with those who may have heard our earlier episode, are surely thinking to themselves, wow, this just sounds different. I mean, it's a different kind of conversation than you often hear when you talk about financial inclusion and even crypto, because it's a very concrete conversation. It's where you're really going at the boundaries of the possible. When you either at Circle or either when you talk to your colleagues over at Circle, I mean, why is it that Circle's doing this? I mean, are you guys, do you think you're special? Is this an idea that you're trying to inspire other firms in the space to emulate? Or is this just something, as you said, you know, specific about, you know, you and some of your colleagues that's just driving you in this direction? I mean, how replicable really?
Yeah.
Is what you're doing, and do you expect to see more of it in the space?
Well, I hope to see more of it in this space, because I think with it comes the opportunity not only to create coalitions of the willing, and I do think there is a general bent towards how can we bend the arc of Moore's law in humanity's favor in this industry. But like all things in life, it requires leadership. And I suppose Circle Impact is what you get when you appoint a poor Puerto Rican kid who was the first to get through high school or college as the chief strategy officer. You get an accelerant of what was already in the DNA of this business and already very much in the DNA of the CEO and others in the company. You just get a way of accelerating it that is really, really, really meaningful. And I hope more than anything else that we could do this well, but that we shouldn't do it alone. I mean, nothing in life worth doing is worth doing alone. So expect a lot of partnerships, a lot of opportunities for Circle, not only to mobilize the crypto industry, but also academic partners, humanitarian partners, and frankly, regulators and policymakers should help us get this right.
Dante, you are always welcome on this show, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, leadership starts at the top, no matter really in which organization you're talking about, whether or not it be in the academy, whether or not it be in the public sector, whether or not it be in the private sector, and It's just a delight to see you really blazing a path. And we wish you the very best of luck.
Thank you, Chris. Always great to be on. And looking forward to reporting live sometime in the future on how this progress is coming along.
Too often, opportunities to make a difference are commonly assumed to be associated with your job description and where you work. But everyone, and I mean everyone, has a chance to make a difference. And whether it be government, nonprofits, or even the private sector, no part of society has a monopoly on the ability to do good. And Dante Disparte and his team at Circle are a case in point. Whatever you may think about crypto or stablecoins or CBDCs for that matter, in big conversations on financial technology, some things ought to be beyond debate. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'd love to get your feedback. If you'd like to get in touch, just hit me up at Chris Brummer, DR. That's at C-H-R-I-S-B-R-U-M-M-E-R-D-R. We'd love to hear from you.